When 18-year-old William Riley Gall, known to most as Riley, learned his ex-girlfriend Emma Walker had died, he took to Twitter to express his grief. After changing his profile photo to a picture of Emma, he also changed his Twitter bio to read, "Living every day through Emma Walker. I love you, beautiful, and I know you're in a better place now." In a tweet written on November 21st, 2016, the day 16-year-old Emma died, Riley wrote, "That's my beautiful Emma. Rest easy now, sweetheart. 1 Corinthians chapter 13. Be sure to remind God about our verse. I love you forever and always." The Bible verse, 1 Corinthians chapter 13, reads, "Love never fails, but where there are prophecies, they will cease. Where there are tongues, they will be stilled. Where there is knowledge, it will pass away." Attached to that tweet were screenshots of a typed message too long to fit within Twitter's character requirements. To think that every memory we have, every happy, special moment we shared, can't ever be relived, an excerpt of the message reads, "I love you, Emma Jane Walker. The amount of pain your family, me, and the community are in because of this is insurmountable. Every time we held hands, kissed, hugged, to imagine that I'll never have that ever again hasn't quite hit me yet." The next day, Riley tweeted again, "I love you, Emma. I can't be around any of that yet. It's too soon. I know you know I'm dying to be there, but understand I can't. I love you." On the surface, perhaps to anyone following that Twitter account, Riley seemed like a distraught boyfriend. And maybe he was. But there was a secret Riley was hiding. Things were definitely not as they seemed. This is Jillian, and you are listening to Court Junkie, episode 128. Emma Jane Walker was born to Jill and Mark Walker on March 20th, 2000, in Knoxville, Tennessee. Emma and her younger brother, Evan, were raised in a home in the Sturkey Hills subdivision in North Knoxville. They attended Central High School, where Emma was on the cheerleading team and a member of Health Occupation Students of America, a future health professionals club. According to her mom, Jill, Emma wanted to be a neonatal nurse.
"I want you, if you could, Ms. Walker, describe for us Emma Walker. What kind of person was she?"
Very independent, young lady. Very curious, empathetic, loved animals. She was the kind of person where she didn't try to act a certain way or do certain things to fit into a group. She was her own person. Also very stubborn teenager, and very fun-loving and silly.
Like many teenagers, Jill said Emma could also be stubborn and defiant, especially when it came to following her parents' rules about boys. When Emma was 14 and a freshman, she met 16-year-old Riley Gall, a junior at Central High School. He was a football player. Jill testified the relationship seemed normal at first, but she and her husband kept a close eye on the couple due to their age difference. Eventually, Jill and Mark became concerned about the nature of Emma and Riley's relationship when they learned Riley didn't always treat Emma well. This led Jill to monitor Emma's text messages and social media accounts. The Walkers also wanted to monitor when Emma and Riley would hang out, so they decided to make Emma's room off limits and preferred the couple to spend time together under their supervision. The Walkers did not want Emma and Riley spending time together alone.
"We just felt like just the things we were seeing and the way he spoke to her and didn't really respect our rules, we just felt like we needed to be around to monitor the relationship more."
Those close to both Emma and Riley, including their friends, later testified that their relationship was toxic and on again, off again. Although Emma and Riley's relationship was never physically violent, they would get into verbal fights or argue over text messages. One message that was read in court read, "You're the biggest bitch I've ever come in contact with. You're dead to me. You're a piece of shit." As pointed out by the defense when cross-examining Jill, Emma would use hateful language to respond to Riley as well. Monitoring Emma's messages, Jill and Mark became concerned over the way Riley would speak to Emma. Jill testified she and Mark would talk to Riley about how he spoke to her. They were also concerned about his lack of respect for them as Emma's parents.
And was he respectful to you?
Face to face, he was respectful to us.
Okay, but would you see something else on the phone?
On the phone, it was just angry if we would say no or not let her do something. I felt like some things were not. He didn't respect us as parents when we said no and then no.
Sometimes the Walkers grounded Emma or took her phone away for a few days in an effort to make her realize how unhealthy her relationship with Riley was. Sometimes Emma was grounded for her behavior as well, such as lying to her parents about hanging out with Riley, unsupervised. Emma would get upset, but she would comply with her punishments. In 2015, the Walkers learned that Riley had been sneaking into their home, so they installed cameras. Throughout 2016, Mark and Jill were continuously worried about Riley and Emma's relationship and tried to discourage Emma from dating Riley. By August 2016, Riley had graduated high school and was a freshman football player at Merivale College in Merivale, Tennessee. Merivale College is a small private college roughly 40 minutes from where Emma lived in North Knoxville. Jill testified that she and Mark had had enough with Emma and Riley's relationship by October 2016. One day in mid-October, when Emma and Riley were hanging out inside the Walker's house, Jill called Mark, who was outside, and asked him to go check on Emma. Mark testified about the incident in court, but wasn't able to get into the specifics. Mark said he caught Emma and Riley breaking the rules he and Jill had set for their home and for their relationship. Riley was asked to leave and was banned from seeing or speaking to Emma. Emma was grounded after the incident, but not for long. On October 30th, 2016, Jill and Mark allowed Emma to go to a friend's house. There, she secretly met up with Riley. Jill and Mark found out about it when the police called them to come pick up 16-year-old Emma after she was found with Riley, who was now 18. Aside from going to school, work, and cheer practice, Emma was grounded following the October 30th incident with Riley. In the days that followed, however, things in the Walker household began to improve. Jill said Emma had become less defiant and seemed happier without Riley in her life. On Friday, November 18th, 2016, Jill and Mark decided to let Emma go to a party and a sleepover at her friend Sarah's house after a home football game. A couple of Emma's friends who were at the party also testified in court. Zach, one of Emma's best friends, said Emma officially broke up with Riley about 2 to 3 weeks before the party at Sarah's house. Zach said he did not like Riley. He called their relationship unhealthy and said Riley was very controlling. While at Sarah's house, Emma started to receive odd text messages from an unknown number, claiming that Riley had been kidnapped and she needed to go outside. Zach testified the text messages scared Emma, but she wanted to go outside to check things out. Zach joined her outside, but they didn't see anything. Zach said Emma showed him the text messages from the unknown number. Those messages were read in court.
"No pictures. Stop playing around and do as I say. Drive to the bottom of the driveway. If you don't by 11:50, I will hurt them. Bring no one.
I know you're one of Riley's friends, but stop.
I won't harm you. Just do as I say, and he won't be hurt.
I'm just calling the cops.
Have it your way.
I know you're Riley's friend. I'm not stupid, and you won't hurt him. I'm blocking you.
I'm no one's friend. We have him now. You have until 11:50.
I broke up with Riley, so chill.
If you don't care about him anymore, then it shouldn't bother you. You've made your choice.
I know Riley's put you up to this, LOL. I'm not dumb.
We have him currently. He hasn't put anyone up to anything. If you're okay with him getting hurt, that's your choice.
I'm blocking you. This is bullshit.
You may want to answer his call. We're letting him have his phone call to anyone. We're letting him have his phone to call anyone before we hurt him. 4 minutes. Call the police and he dies. Your choice. We're allowing him one last chance to get a hold of you. You've made your choice. If you'd like to hear his crying and screams, give him a call. Until next time. He's in the ditch beside her house. It's a shame you can all of a sudden not value someone else's life. Repeated same text. He's in the ditch beside her house. It's a shame you can all of a sudden not value someone else's life. You might want to check on him since you don't care. Just let him lay there. He was unconscious when we left him. That was your warning. We will be back. Next time it will be worse. Humiliation is fun, too, and watching you make him out to be a crazy person made our night. See you soon.
Zach had a hunch the mysterious text messages were coming from Riley. He testified he believed Emma thought that, too. About 30 to 40 minutes later, after those first text messages, Emma and Zach went outside again, and this time they saw a person laying in the driveway, face down. Zach went back inside to let Sarah's father know what was going on. Zach, Sarah's father, and a few others went outside and found out the mysterious figure was Riley. Emma's friend Max testified that Riley was upset and said, "I don't know where I am, my head hurts," and claimed he had been kidnapped. But Emma wasn't buying it. Max said she was upset with Riley and told him that she couldn't do this anymore, which then upset Riley. Max testified that Emma made it clear she wanted Riley to leave, so he walked away. As they walked back inside, Zach testified that Emma was crying and scared. She made sure all the curtains and blinds on the windows were closed, so Riley couldn't watch her from outside. As Riley left Sarah's house, he called his friends and told them he had been kidnapped. Riley's friend Isaac testified that he and their other friends didn't believe that story, but they agreed to pick Riley up anyway. However, before they could leave their friend Noah's house, Riley showed up claiming he had been hit over the head and couldn't remember anything. When asked what he thought about Riley and Emma's relationship, Isaac testified that it was unhealthy and chaotic. The next morning, Emma and her friends left Sarah's house to grab breakfast at Chick-fil-A. After that, Emma drove home to an empty house. Meanwhile, Emma's mom, Jill, was working at a fundraiser at the nearby elementary school where she worked. Emma was supposed to meet her there at 10:30, but when Emma didn't show up 30 minutes later, Jill drove home to check on her daughter. When Jill arrived at the house, Riley was in the driveway with Emma. Jill asked him to leave. In court, the story goes that Emma told Jill that when she came home that morning and went inside the house, a man dressed all in black showed up and started banging on the doors. Emma had called Riley to ask if it was him. Riley told her that it wasn't him, but he would drive over to her house to check on her. Riley arrived at the Walker residence quickly. That night, Riley was back to hanging out with his friends in Knoxville. Those friends were Isaac, Alex, and Noah, all boys Riley had known for a long time. He had known Isaac since elementary school. Alex testified that after they all graduated high school, the group would often hang out at Noah's house since Noah's parents no longer lived there and they often had the house to themselves. Their number one activity was playing video games such as Call of Duty, a first-person shooter game. On Saturday, the day after the kidnapping incident, Alex noticed Riley wasn't himself, so he decided to talk to him about the night before and give him a chance to explain what was going on. Riley told him that people were after him and that he had been kidnapped. He said he was scared and that he stole a gun from his grandfather. Alex said he didn't believe Riley, but instead thought he might be suicidal. He listened to him and told him that he was there for him. As Alex mentioned in court, Riley had been suicidal. Riley's grandfather, who Riley had a close relationship with, testified that Riley had gone through a, quote, tremendous emotional crisis after starting school at Merivale College. One of Riley's friends at Merivale College testified that Riley often turned to his teammates on the football team for relationship advice. He had heard Riley say once that he couldn't see himself without Emma and that he needed her. About 2 weeks before Emma died, Riley's teammates found him passed out in his car with empty pill bottles, alcohol bottles, and a presumed suicide note. Riley had tried to take his own life. He was rushed to the nearby hospital, which is minutes away from the Merivale College campus. He was treated, discharged, and enrolled in counseling. The news of Riley stealing his grandfather's gun alarmed Alex. Riley showed Alex the gun, a Glock 9mm, which he was keeping in his car. Riley told Alex he didn't know if it was loaded or not. Later, when Riley wasn't around, Alex told Isaac and Noah about the gun. They decided to talk to Riley and have an intervention on Sunday. However, the intervention didn't happen. During cross-examination, Alex was asked why he let his friend, who was suicidal, keep a gun. Alex said that by Sunday, Riley seemed happier and not as upset. Although Riley's grandfather rarely used the gun other than to keep it in good working order, it didn't take long for him to notice it was missing. Frightened that Riley may have taken it, he drove with Riley's mom to Merivale College to search Riley's dorm and car, but they never found the gun. On Sunday, November 20th, 2016, Emma worked her usual shift as a cashier at a local grocery store. That morning, Jill followed Emma to work and they had breakfast. After work, she and Mark followed Emma home because Emma was scared following the Man in Black incident. That evening, the Walkers ate dinner and Emma did her homework, then went to get ice cream with her dad. Before bed, Emma asked her parents to make sure the alarm was set and all the doors were locked. Emma had lived in that house her entire life and had never asked her parents to do that before. The Walkers then went to bed for the night. A little while later, Jill woke up and decided to check on her kids. Both Emma and Evan were asleep. Emma's TV was on, so Jill turned it off and went back to bed. At around 3 a.m., two loud noises echoed through the Walker house. Mark testified that he was usually a heavy sleeper. However, on that morning, he woke up. He said it sounded like someone had opened and slammed one of the doors in the house. The first noise woke him up. The second noise made him think someone was in the house, so he immediately ran to Emma's room. Mark said that with all the bizarre things that had happened that weekend, Emma was his first worry. He opened Emma's door but didn't turn on the light. In the darkness, Mark said Emma appeared to be safe and fast asleep. Evan was also asleep in his bed, so Mark made his rounds around the house to make sure all the doors were locked. He also checked the bathrooms to see if the toilets were still running, just in case what he had heard was someone getting up to use the bathroom. But the house was silent, and all of the doors were locked, so Mark went back to bed. When Jill woke up at 5 a.m., Mark had already left for work. Although it was the week of Thanksgiving, Jill and the kids still had to go to school part of the week, so Jill got ready for the day and started making breakfast and packing lunches. Emma had told her mother the day before that she needed to wake up earlier than usual so she could have time to wash her hair. Jill went into Emma's bedroom at around 6:15 a.m. to wake her up.
And there was no response. And so I went over to her shoulder and said, Emma, and then there was no response. So I was checking for a pulse, and there was no response. She was unresponsive.
Could you see what was wrong?
I couldn't tell what was wrong.
Okay. And what did you do next?
And I called 911.
And did you go back in the room after that initial time?
Yes.
Okay. What for?
Just to make sure there wasn't anything I could do.
Describe how you saw your daughter that morning.
She was laying on her back. Her tongue was out of her mouth. I noticed something on the bed. I thought that was she got sick or was vomit. I wasn't sure. But she looked like she was sleeping.
And what were you thinking? What's wrong?
I had no idea.
And what did you tell 911?
That she was just unresponsive.
After Jill discovered Emma unresponsive in her bed, Evan called Mark at work, telling him he had to come home immediately. On his way home, Evan called his father again to let him know that Emma was dead. Rumors about what happened to Emma spread at school and within the community quickly. Some said it was an accidental overdose. Others said they heard Emma had died by suicide. The answer was unclear because even the investigators weren't sure what had happened at first. In court, it was revealed that it took investigators some time to figure out that Emma had been shot and that she didn't do it herself. Knox County Sheriff's Office Detective Alan Merritt was one of the investigators at the scene. Emma's bedroom was located in the back of the Walker's one-story home.
Emma, of course, was deceased in the bed. I noticed that there was a fair amount of what you describe as brain matter, gray matter on the side of her head. It was obvious she had a wound to the left side of her head. Of course, I immediately noticed on the wall across from her head. So she's laying in the bed this way. You know, here, she's laying in the bed this way. This would be the back of the house, the wall here. So I noticed there's a wound in the side of her head above her ear. And I noticed there's a hole in the wall directly across from her head. I also noticed the pillow beside her head had damage to it, as if something had penetrated in one side of the pillow and out the other. I continued work through the crime scene, looking for evidence. I determined that there was actually a second bullet hole in the end wall of the house.
The second bullet hole in the house was directly behind and in line with Emma's body. Outside, Detective Merritt observed scuff marks on the wooden privacy fence around the Walker's home. To him, that indicated someone had climbed and jumped over the fence. And he noticed that the bottom of the windowsill at the back of the house appeared to be about the same height as the top of where Emma's mattress was.
So if I'm standing outside the residence and I look and I see this window, and I have intimate knowledge of the residence, in other words, I've been inside, which I have been. And so I'm able to stand outside and determine that the bottom of this windowsill is in line with the top of her mattress. If I also, in fact, have intimate knowledge that Emma Walker sleeps on pillows, actually three to be exact, then her head's going to be in an elevated position. Does everybody follow me on that so far? So if, in fact, I am standing in the back of the residence, and I decide I want to shoot into his residence with the purpose of inflicting serious bodily injury, I would aim where the body is, which is exactly where the bullet hole was. That was the thing that struck me about the actual entrance of the bullet into the residence, is it was in a direct location, orientation, where Emma Walker's head would be inside the residence. Again, based on intimate knowledge of the residence, where the pillows would allow her head to be.
Spent casings were also found outside. During his testimony, Detective Merritt talked about Call of Duty, and how in the game, characters can do a thing called wall banging, where you shoot through a wall to kill your opponent. The medical examiner testified that Emma was only shot once in the head, and even if Mark had realized Emma had been shot immediately after it happened, it was highly likely Emma would have died anyway. When asked who may want to hurt her daughter, Jill gave detectives Riley's name. Riley's roommate, Andrew, testified that Riley returned to their dorm room on campus early Monday morning and asked Andrew to wake him up in time for his 8 a.m. class. Andrew agreed and went back to sleep. At around 7:45 a.m., both boys were awake, and Riley told him Emma had been hurt. As Riley's friends learned about what had happened to Emma, they decided to check on their friend. When Isaac heard the news, he called Riley, and Riley asked him to come over. Isaac testified that he didn't want to meet up with Riley because he had a feeling that Riley, who he loved like a brother, may have killed Emma. On that Sunday, before Emma was killed, Riley spent part of the day with his friends in Knoxville, but left his friend Noah's house at around 11 p.m. to return to campus to work on a paper, according to testimony from his friend Isaac. Noah told the jury Riley then called him at around midnight, asking if he could come back over to his house. Noah said no because he had class the next morning and the other boys were leaving. Riley then told Noah his roommate was wondering how to clean fingerprints off of a gun. Noah said he asked him why the fuck he would ask him something like that and to never ask him that again. Riley wasn't aware that at that point, Alex had told Noah and Isaac about him stealing his grandfather's gun. Phone records show Riley contacted Emma that night through text messages and phone calls, a total of about 64 times. Emma only answered one of his calls and talked to him for about 14 minutes. Some of the text messages were read in court.
And he's saying things like, in his text, Emma, I'm begging. That's 1209-39. I'm begging. 1203-47. Please, God, answer. 1203-50. Please, I'm begging you. This is 3 hours before he kills her. 1203-57. I ain't hurt like this. 1204-01. Please just talk to me. This is from Mac's phone to Emma's. 1204-04. Please. 1204-40. Please. 1206-06. Please. 1206-10, don't do this, I can't. 1206-28, please.
Using phone records, testimony from neighbors who heard the gunshots, and other evidence, investigators surmised that Riley arrived outside the Walker residence at about 3 a.m. Monday morning. He jumped the fence and fired two shots through the wall into Emma's bedroom before fleeing the scene. He then drove back to Maryville College, talked to his roommate, and went to sleep. Riley's roommate, Andrew, testified Riley was gone all weekend and didn't return to their dorm room until around 4:45 a.m. Monday morning. Andrew also testified that he grew up using guns and knew how to load, shoot, and clean one. He would have no reason to ask anyone how to clean fingerprints off a gun. Those who saw Riley on that Monday morning described him as stoic and visibly upset at the news of Emma's death. His friends and family were afraid he would try to harm himself again. When Alex found out Emma had died, he said he immediately thought Riley might have had something to do with it. He was also concerned about his friend's emotional well-being, so he reached out to him. Riley asked Alex to come over to his house in Knoxville, and so he did. In Riley's driveway, Alex asked him about the gun, and Riley said he already gave it back to his grandfather. But later, Riley's mom told Alex the gun was still missing. At this point, Riley's mom didn't know that Riley had the gun. After talking to Riley, Alex decided he needed to tell the police what he knew. Detective Merritt and another Knox County detective, James Hurst, interviewed Riley later that night for nearly 2 hours. That interview was played in court. The interview begins with detectives asking Riley about his weekend. Riley said he got up around 9 a.m. on Saturday, then left to go to his stepdad's house to get some clothes when Emma called him frantic. She said someone, a man wearing black, was trying to get into her house. Riley said he went over to Emma's house and checked things out in the backyard. Jill then arrived shortly after and asked him to leave. "Her parents aren't fond of me," he said. Riley then told the detectives about the rest of his day that Saturday, which included hanging out and spending the night at his friend Noah's house. On Sunday morning, he went to his grandparents' house until about 4:30 before going back to Noah's. Riley said he left Noah's at around 7 p.m. to quickly run back to his grandfather's house to borrow his laptop. He said he had been asking Emma to talk to him for the last couple days, and she told him that if he helped her out with a paper, she would talk to him. When he tried to call her later, she told him not to call her from his phone, that her mom wouldn't let her talk to him, so he would have to call her from a friend's phone. He got back to campus around 11:45, he said, and then he used a friend's phone to call her. Other testimony throughout the trial revealed that it wasn't uncommon for Riley to borrow his friends' phones to contact Emma. Riley said their phone call didn't go very well, and that Emma said a bunch of cruel stuff before hanging up and blocking his friend's number. Riley said in the conversation, Emma told him that although she loved him and cared about him, she didn't want to be in a relationship with him anymore. Riley said she wouldn't hear him out on how he felt, and she called him crazy. Riley told detectives he decided to work on some of his homework, but realized he had left his school account logged in on his grandfather's computer in Knoxville, so he left campus to go back to his grandfather's house. During trial, testimony from a Maryville College staff member revealed that the school used a Google account for students. Therefore, they could be logged in on multiple devices. Riley said his grandfather was awake and saw him enter the home that night. He drove back to campus and arrived around 1 a.m. and decided to sit in his car for a few hours and work on homework there before going back into his dorm at around 3 a.m. After his last phone call with Emma, Riley told investigators he decided to send her a text message. He said he told her how much he loved her, and that he was sorry they weren't together anymore, and he knew she would do great things. Then Riley said he went to bed and fell asleep. The next morning, when he was notified Emma had died, Riley told investigators he had a breakdown. The detectives then asked Riley more questions about his relationship with Emma. He told them they dated on and off for about 2 years, and he broke up with her once to date another girl. But before long, he and Emma started dating again. Emma then officially broke up with him about 3 weeks prior to her death. When asked what he knows about guns, Riley shared what he knew about loading a revolver and a handgun, but indicated he's never actually done it. "Have you ever shot your grandfather's gun?" detectives asked Riley. "No," he responded. "And you said you've never shot a gun before, of any kind?" they asked. "No, sir," Riley responded again. When asked if he owns any guns, Riley once again said no. Then detectives asked Riley what he knew about Emma's death. He said he doesn't know how she died, but that he heard a rumor that a stray bullet had come through the wall and had hit her while she was sleeping. When asked where he heard that, Riley said his friend Jacob told him about the stray bullet rumor. Riley said the last time he talked to Emma was on that Sunday. During that conversation, he said she didn't mention if anyone was mad at her. He then reminded investigators about the mysterious man in black Emma said she saw at her house on Saturday. In court, camera footage from the surrounding homes confirmed the man in black story, Except the prosecution argued the man in black was no random stranger. It was Riley. Because the detectives spoke to Alex, they knew about how Riley had claimed he was kidnapped that Friday night. They asked Riley if he knew of anyone who would want to hurt him. Riley said no. He said he didn't remember much about the kidnapping. He said he pulled into his stepfather's driveway Friday night and saw two men across the street. The next thing he knew, the men grabbed him and took him to their vehicle. They blindfolded him. Again, Riley said he couldn't remember much about what happened and noted that he hadn't even told his mom about the incident. Riley said the reason he hadn't told many people about being kidnapped was because he was afraid no one would take him seriously. He said the kidnappers asked him about Emma and that he thought someone was playing a prank on him. His next memory of the incident was waking up in Emma's friend Sarah's driveway with a headache. The detectives then told Riley that Alex had told them that he stole a gun from his grandfather. They told him that they wanted to recover the gun to keep him safe, since his friends and family were afraid he would hurt himself. When asked where his grandfather's gun was, Riley said he didn't know, and when he tried to die by suicide before, he hadn't used a gun and he could never use a gun to do that. Riley insisted he didn't know why his friends would tell police he had a gun. After talking with Riley for more than an hour, detectives were ready to confront him about the bullets they found at the crime scene. They told Riley the rounds recovered at Emma's house matched the same type that would go in his grandfather's gun. They also told him his story was somewhat consistent, but that there were many holes in it. They asked if they could look at Riley's phone to see if his story matched what he told them. Riley said he didn't bring his phone with him and showed them his empty pockets. It was right around then when the reality of the situation finally seemed to click for Riley. "I hope to God I'm not a suspect in her death," he said. He said he would never hurt Emma. When asked point blank if he shot her, he said no. After that last question, the jury's viewing of Riley's interview with police ended. Riley wasn't taken into custody that Monday night. Instead, he left the interrogation room angry and paranoid. He decided to confront Alex. An excerpt of that conversation was read in court.
I'm going to read the R parts and you read what you said, okay? Alex, man, I need you to text me right now.
What's up?
Delete these texts after I send this next one to you, please.
Okay.
Why did you tell them about the gun? They think I shot her because of it. Please text me back.
Alex tells him that if he didn't do anything, he has nothing to hide. He then says that Riley lied to him about having given the gun back to his grandfather.
Just promise me I didn't fucking kill her. I would never hurt her, and I'm probably going to jail.
Alex says that if Riley gives the police the gun, they can prove that it wasn't the murder weapon.
Just please don't talk to them anymore. I'm probably going to jail for something I didn't do. Dude, I can talk to you in person later about it if I'm not in jail, but just please don't talk to the cops anymore and delete these texts.
Dude, just tell me what's going on. Did she get shot?
Alex, I really can't talk about any of it without breaking down. Just promise me you won't talk to them again.
Although he was upset with his friends, Riley still asked for their help in getting rid of his grandfather's gun. He told Alex he wanted to throw the gun into the Tennessee River on Tuesday. Isaac, Noah, and Alex agreed to help Riley, but what Riley didn't know was that his friends would give the Knox County Sheriff's Office a heads up. The next day, Riley's friends in the sheriff's office devised a plan to catch Riley. His friends agreed to wear a secret device to audio and video record him without his knowledge. The secret recording was played in court. On Tuesday evening, Riley meets up with his friends at Noah's house. The plan to dispose of his grandfather's gun and some other evidence at an area along the Tennessee River called the Bluffs is in motion. At first, Riley meets his friends outside, and once they get inside, they all sit down and talk about what happened to Emma and what the plan moving forward is. At this point, Riley is still denying that he was involved, but as he tells his friends in the recording, he's afraid that if he doesn't get rid of the gun, he'll be blamed for her death. "I would never hurt her a day in her life," Riley says. He then asks his friends to lie to the police or grand jury if they're ever asked anything about him again. In the secret recording, Riley instructs his friends to say they misunderstood him because they were drunk or high on acid over the weekend, and the only sober person all weekend was him. Riley tells his friends that he knew the detectives were trying to get something out of him.
They said they found my grandfather's fingerprint on one of the bullets. But if they had actually found the fingerprint, he would be in custody.
Riley says he thinks the detectives believe he used his grandfather's gun to shoot at Emma's house. Riley's friends play along and suggest Emma's parents are trying to come after him too. Riley says all of the drama is making it hard for him to mourn Emma properly, and that he couldn't even go to the candlelight vigil in her honor because he was afraid the people there would be too focused on him. Sounding irritated, Riley then talks about how much attention his tweets about Emma were getting, and how a guy who used to have a crush on Emma had tweeted something that said, "If you knew the truth about what happened, you'd be disgusted." Riley goes on to discuss how Emma may have died. He says he doesn't believe the theory about her being shot, because if she was shot, why didn't her parents hear the gun? And if Emma had been shot, wouldn't she have woken up and asked for help? "You just don't get shot and lay there," he says. Then he reminds his friends about the severity of the situation and how he needs to get rid of the gun ASAP. He tells his friends they don't have to go with him if they don't want to, but insists he has to get rid of the gun, even though he knows his grandfather's gun didn't kill Emma. Riley then talks about his interview with police for a bit before talking about his relationship with Emma. He says he was her first and only love. Reflecting on the weekend before, Riley tells his friends that when Emma FaceTimed him on Saturday about the man in black, she said, "I hate you, but I need you." Eventually, the secret recording jumps to Riley and his friends driving to the dump site. Alex testified that they made 3 stops before going to the Bluffs. They had to stop by Riley's stepdad's for Riley to pick up some other items. Then they grabbed some fast food and stopped for gas. Noah was in the back seat the whole time, waiting to text the sheriff's office to let them know that Riley for sure had the gun and where they would be going. On the secret recording, the boys can be heard listening to music and singing along as they drive to the Bluffs. Eventually, Riley says, "Nah, I just want to throw it and be done." Before arriving at the Bluffs, someone takes the gun out of the bag, and someone else says, "Don't touch it unless you have gloves." Another friend says, "Oh my God, this is a real gun." The recording ends with the moment the sheriff's office closes in on Riley and his friends.
"Oh, what you got?
Riley was taken into custody that night. In his possession were trash bags, gloves, black clothing, and his grandfather's gun. On January 18, 2017, a grand jury in Knox County, Tennessee, indicted Riley on 7 charges, especially aggravated stalking, theft, tampering with evidence, reckless endangerment, employing a firearm during a dangerous felony, first-degree murder, and felony murder. Prior to his trial, Riley finally made a confession. He admitted that he was guilty of reckless endangerment after firing his grandfather's gun through Emma's bedroom wall. However, Riley said he didn't mean to kill her. He just wanted to scare her. Riley's trial began on May 1st, 2018, in Knoxville. During opening statements, prosecutor Kevin Allen laid out the timeline of Riley and Emma's relationship. From the time their relationship began until Riley shot and killed her through her bedroom wall. Riley's defense attorney, Wesley Stone, argued during his opening statements that Riley didn't mean to kill Emma and that he's not guilty of first-degree murder or felony murder, but voluntary manslaughter because he committed this crime in the heat of passion. He pointed out that Riley couldn't have been the man in black Emma saw at her house because she FaceTimed Riley and could clearly see he was not in her neighborhood or outside her house dressed all in black. And even though the weekend was plagued by strange and frightening events, not once did the Walkers or anyone else notify the police about the kidnapping incident, the man in black incident, or Riley having a gun. Riley's attorney also said that he was not guilty of stalking, theft, or tampering of evidence. The jury heard from Emma's family and friends, and Riley's family and friends, as well as the medical examiner who conducted Emma's autopsy, a ballistics expert, and the detectives on the case. Jessica Hudson from the Tennessee Bureau of Investigation's Firearm Identification Unit recovered two bullets from the crime scene. She testified that the way the gun is manufactured, it doesn't leave behind exact marks on the bullets. So the results from the test that would determine whether Riley's grandfather's gun was used to kill Emma were inconclusive. However, shell casings and cartridge cases found at the crime scene did match the gun. She also testified that the gun was not in perfect working condition. Riley chose not to testify, and the defense didn't call any witnesses to the stand. They rested their case while also filing a motion to have the charges against Riley dropped, which isn't uncommon for defense attorneys to do. The judge denied their request. During closing arguments, the prosecution reminded the jury who Emma Walker was, a girl who was deeply loved and who had a bright future ahead of her.
You heard from Jill Walker, Evan Walker, Mark Walker, and they are crushed. They're crushed with the loss of a spirit that was like sunshine to them. She was strong-willed. She was sassy. She was sarcastic sometimes. But she was their light. And they're blessed that they got 16 years with her. And they can look at it that way and live the rest of their lives knowing at least we got that. But they'll be always be muted. You could sense that from them when they took the stand. Each one of them has suffered a loss at the hands of him. This guy, his personal responsibility, his actions, everything that he did caused them to suffer, and every person in here who she touched in their lives will never be the same again. Because of him and his selfishness and his lies and his possessiveness and his manipulation and his obsessiveness of Emma Walker.
Prosecutor Kevin Allen made a point to remind the jury that Emma was only 16. She was still a child, he argued, while Riley was an adult. Riley was an adult who kept trying to shift blame on who was responsible for Emma's death.
That's what this whole weekend was a setup for. He set the whole weekend up to shift responsibility to somebody else, to say there's this nefarious clandestine organization that's out there trying to get me and Emma through the kidnapping story, through the man in black story, through the homicide and murder of that 16-year-old girl when she slept.
He then went over each of Riley's charges with the jury and explained why he's guilty of each one, including felony murder, where the predicate felony is attempted aggravated child abuse.
And so you think about the concept of taking a firearm and discharging the firearm into a child's bedroom while she sleeps,
And folks, there's no other conclusion that you can come to, but that is the attempted aggravated child abuse, which is just simply that the defendant knowingly attempted to, other than by accident, he told you he did it, treat a child in a manner to inflict injury. And that a deadly weapon was used to accomplish the act.
He argued that Emma's murder was premeditated. Phone records showed that on the way to Knoxville that night with his grandfather's gun, Riley texted his mother, asking if they had found the gun yet. He also reminded the jury of what Riley tweeted after shooting Emma.
You saw the tweets in opening statement. Tweets out, rest sweet Emma. Tell God about our verse. Love never fails. 1 Corinthians. What a phony, phony, nasty thing to do to that family. How could you do that? If you have no conscience, you could do that.
During the defense's closing arguments, Riley's attorney, Wesley Stone, told the jury it was okay to have sympathy, but that they can't let it determine their verdict. Although the defense didn't call any witnesses, they made the argument that while Riley admitted to firing his gun through Emma's bedroom wall, that didn't mean he intended to hurt or kill her. There wasn't any evidence that proved Riley even knew how to operate his grandfather's gun, Wesley Stone said. If Riley intended to kill Emma that night, the jury had to assume Riley knew the height of Emma's bed and box frame and mattress, he argued, while also assuming Riley knew exactly how Emma was laying, assuming he knew she was in bed, assuming he knew how many pillows Emma was laying on, and assuming Riley knew where her head was.
I submit to you, you have to assume he knew the height of the foundation, height of the floor joists, height of the subfloor, spaces between studs. And you have to assume that he knew this firearm that had never been fired in 13 years was in perfect operating condition.
The defense also wanted the jury to know that Emma and Riley had been in love and that they still cared about each other. Photos from Emma's bedroom show she had a photo of her and Riley on her bedside table the night she died, and a letter from Emma found in Riley's car, alongside a picture of her, was read in court. In the letter, Emma tells Riley she loves him so much and can't live without him. Although Riley was technically a legal adult, the defense argued he was still young and not mature enough to understand his actions. They also argued that just because Riley played Call of Duty doesn't make him a real-life killer.
I remember playing Duck Hunt. I don't know if anybody ever played Duck Hunt, but back when it first came out on Nintendo, you had Super Mario Brothers and Duck Hunt. You actually had a little plastic gun. I love playing Frogger. That doesn't mean that I want to go hopping across the street to try to get him, not get run over by cars. I listen to Bob Marley, but I don't smoke weed.
To prove Riley wasn't stalking Emma, they argued that Emma had contacted Riley on her own free will on that Saturday.
When Riley Gall fired that shot in the backyard, as crazy as it is, and as bizarre as it is, he was hoping that he could come to her rescue. He didn't hear any screams. He didn't hear any lights come, didn't see lights come on. Certainly didn't believe that he had struck her, because if he had, he wouldn't have fired a second shot.
The jury deliberated for 4 hours before reaching their verdict.
Mr. Gilder, in count one, the first defined offense, charging the defendant with first-degree murder. Did the jury reach a verdict?
Yes, we did.
What is your verdict?
Guilty.
The jury also found Riley guilty of stalking, reckless endangerment, theft, tampering with evidence, possession of a firearm during a dangerous felony, and felony murder. The judge sentenced Riley to a mandatory life term in prison with the possibility of parole. How much time Riley would serve for his other convictions was decided at a sentencing hearing in September 2018. As reported in the Knoxville News Sentinel, Riley issued a statement to his family and to Emma's family at one of the sentencing hearings. "I'm sorry I took Emma away from you," he said. "My intentions were not and never have been to cause physical harm. I wanted to scare her. I loved Emma. There's not a day that goes by that I don't think about her or what I did." Riley also apologized to his family. At his final sentencing hearing, the prosecution asked the court to give Riley a consecutive sentence for the other charges he was convicted of, while Riley's defense attorney asked for a concurrent sentence, or one served at the same time as his murder sentence. The judge ultimately decided not to sentence Riley to additional time in prison. He will be eligible for parole after serving 51 years, when he is 71 years old. In the aftermath of Emma Walker's murder, those who loved her or were impacted by her story have found ways to honor her memory. The Emma Walker Memorial Scholarship was established for graduating seniors at Central High School who plan to pursue a career in healthcare. Family and friends of Emma also raised money to name a room in the neonatal intensive care unit at East Tennessee Children's Hospital in her honor, since it was Emma's dream to be a neonatal nurse. A dog park in Knoxville was also renamed after Emma. Former Knox County Mayor Tim Burchett declared March 24th as Emma Jane Walker Day in 2017. And every year on that day, Emma's family encourages everyone to do a random act of kindness. And that's all for this episode. As always, I'd love to hear your thoughts on this case. So let me know by joining the conversation on Instagram at Court Junkie, by tweeting me at Court Junkie Pod, or by emailing me at podcast@courtjunkie.com. This episode was researched and written by Jordan Hensley. And before I go, please don't forget to subscribe to my YouTube channel, where I'm going to be releasing some behind-the-scenes videos and some other cool stuff. That's youtube.com/courtjunkie. Thanks again for listening. Until next time.